something a little different. And I know it may be a little awkward for you, but you'll get over it. Here's what I'd like for you to do. If the person sitting next to you belongs to you, I would like for you to look to them and say, I love you. Now, if they don't belong to you, we got too much laughing going on here. Hey, that's enough. Only because I'm feeling jealous, because I don't know where Robin is. There she is. I love you, babes. All right, now, if they don't belong to you, or even if they do, I want you to, and we'll start at this side of this people on this side going this way, and people, you know, so you know who's doing what, but look at the person that way to you and compliment them in some way. Dress, shirt, tie, sing, say something nice. If you can't think of anything that, just say, I'm glad you're here. So those of you that are sitting this side, look to the people that side and say something nice to them. All right. Now, those of you that are sitting on this side, say the same thing, or maybe not, to the person sitting here. So here's what we've done. We have been able to in just a matter of what, 2 to 3 minutes, if it was even that, with just a matter of how many words did we speak? Not a whole lot. But we as a congregation were able to have a lot of fun laughing, and hopefully some of the things that we said we meant. We may have really enjoyed their singing. We may really be glad they're here. But again, the point I'm trying to make is notice the power of words. You know, had we sat here and if I had done it differently, we could have done it this way. Okay, I want to do something different here this morning, and even if you don't like it, you're going to get over it. But I want you, just for the next 3 minutes, say nothing. Kind of awkward, huh? But the power of words. Words are hugely powerful. Here, let me give you a few more examples. We've got some ladies who are with child, but in a few months, is Rainey here? Yeah, we're glad. Oh, not right now. Well, she was here, and I was glad. We need to continue to pray for her. She's got the pregnancy plus leukemia, but I'm glad to hear that she's here. And when's the baby due here? Pretty quick? 15th, man, just right around the corner. So before long, we're going to hear some powerful words. Congratulations, you have a... Do you know what the sex is? Boy. Congratulations, you have a son. Again, we've got a couple other moms. Congratulations, you will have a son. Or congratulations, you have a daughter. Huge words. And I can remember way back in the day, when we were able to come out of the birthing room and my parents were there, and I was able to come out and tell my parents, I have a son. And then I was able to come out a couple years later and tell them, I have a daughter. And then we didn't have Facebook, Twitter, and all that kind of stuff. We had to use the old-fashioned phone calls back then. It was probably costing me a quarter each time back in those dark ages. But calling everybody and just the power of the words. Here again is the other extreme, which some of us have experienced. But this is when the doctor comes out, instead of saying, congratulations, you have a son, they come out and they say, I'm sorry. We did everything we could. Just a matter of a few words, but the words are powerful. Or here'd be another one that fortunately not many of us have heard, but it'd be something like this. Come into the boss's office and he says, you know, I'm sorry, but because of the continuing economic environment, we're going to have to let you go. Just a matter of few words, but how powerful those words are. Or how about this? This is not a drill. Abandon ship. Get out of the house. Whatever it is, but this is not a drill. Or here's another one that's maybe a little bit sadder. Again, but you know, the phone call rings and you pick up the phone call and it says, Mrs. Scogan, this is the Middletown Township Police Department. You know, just the power of just those words, they are huge. And we know, again, the origin of the words. You know, they become with God. You know, we have in Genesis 1:3, then God said, God created us in His image. He created us with the capacity to communicate. That communication is we are to be praising God and we're to be blessing men. The source of words, and I want you to turn your Bibles to Matthew chapter 12. This is, again, pretty profound. You're going to have to really pay attention because I got some illustration or applications that I want to spend some time with. And I hope that this passage is not new to you, but we're going to go kind of quickly through this. The source of words, Matthew 12:34. And we're jumping right in the middle of this context here. But verse 34 says, brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Verse 35, a good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say to you, that every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. The heart. Whether it's a good heart or an evil heart, whether it's a good treasure or an evil treasure, the heart is important. And again, those of you that have been around here for a while, you have a pretty good knowledge or understanding of what the heart is. But the heart is that inner person. It is the control panel of your, well, it'd be like the control panel of your CPU unit. Or maybe it'd be the Intel chip that runs that motherboard. It would be maybe the computer that runs your car. It is basically, it is what, our heart is what determines what we do, what we think, and how we feel. It's our heart that basically is what, again, governs our whole of life. Well, that's what Proverbs says. We are to put a garrison around our heart. Above all, diligence. With everything we can possibly muster, we are to guard and to put a garrison and protect our heart. For out of our heart then flows the course, the direction of life. If someone has a very greedy heart, they think greedy thoughts. They have greedy emotions. They do greedy actions. If someone is very selfish and they're ugly, or if someone is very godly or spirit-filled, if they have a spirit-filled heart, their words, their actions, their thoughts, their emotions are love, joy, and peace. So it's the heart which is basically the source or the basis of our thoughts, our minds, our will. To illustrate that, look over in a page to Matthew 5:18. I'm sorry, 15. Matthew 15:18. Matthew 15:18. And again, we're jumping right in the middle of this context here, but notice what verse 15, verse 17 and 18 says. Do you not understand that whatever enters the mouth of the man goes into the stomach and is eliminated? But those things which proceed out of the mouth comes from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts. So again, the heart is where our thoughts come from. Murders, adulteries, out of the heart comes our actions. The thefts, the false witness, the blasphemes. These are the things which defile a man. But not to eat with unwashed hands. That does not defile a man. So, it's from our heart comes these thoughts, these actions, these feelings. It's the heart. The source of the words come from our heart. When you think about it this way, back in Matthew chapter 12, it basically says, out of the abundance of the heart, the abundance, again, we don't really need any Greek or Hebrew to figure this out. There is an abundance. It's like this glass here. If this was filled another maybe 3/4 to 1 inch more, if I jostled it like this, we'd have an overflow. Fortunately, they didn't fill it that full, and I didn't get anything out of it. If it was an abundance of water in the glass, a little jostle, and it would come out. Well, again, there in Jesus' words there in Matthew 12, it is from what is filled up to the brim in our heart is what comes out. Now, I know at times we are able to control that. But basically, if the heart is jammed full of something, whether it is good or bad, the least little jostling, the least little provocation, and what is in the mouth or heart will just spill out of the mouth. Those of you that maybe have hot water heaters, your hot water heater, you've got that release valve, right? And the release valve on the top of that is that if the pressure builds up too much, instead of exploding, it trips the lever, and you've got that drain tube that goes down to this little ridiculous 4-inch tube or pan. Like, how is all that water going to just stay within that 4-inch pan? But in any event, the release valve, the pressure builds, the release valve kicks, the water comes down into the pan. And that's the same thing with you and I. Sooner or later, our mouth speaks kind of in an involuntary way. There's a stressful situation, and we've been able to try to guard it and to keep it suppressed. But in a situation, a stressful situation, our hearts are revealed. Sometimes when we're very angry, again, that abundance of our heart is revealed. Sometimes in patience, traffic, Christmas traffic. Where do all these cars come from? My goodness, they multiply like whatever. It's like crazy. And I don't understand it personally myself, why when the light turns green, everyone can't start moving at the same time. But I kid you not, there's about a 10-second delay between when the first car starts and the next car starts and the next car starts. So I don't even get to move. I mean, the light turns green, I sit, I wait, I see yellow, it's red, and then finally I can move. They ought to make a law that if everyone just started moving, impatience. And at that impatient moment, as we sit, three lights, out of the abundance of our heart comes our words. Now, with that, we ought not shrug that off. Because we are often not very skilled at dealing with issues of our heart and doing deep soul searching. But when that abundance comes out, we need to stop and examine that and say, oh my goodness, is that really part of my heart? Well, if the Bible says there in Matthew 12 and 15 it is, then yeah, you got some bad cells. You got something bad in there you need to be working on. Out of the abundance of the heart. Sometimes when we think we're all alone, we say things only to be a little chagrined that someone overheard us. Sometimes we're with other non-Christians. We will say things. But what we say can reveal our heart. James chapter 3. Just jot that down on the top half of that back panel. James chapter 3 has a wealth of information on the tongue. With that tongue, it is powerful. Literally, life and death is in the power of the tongue. With that tongue, we can praise God. With that tongue, we can curse men. The tongue is as powerful as a rudder with a horse. The tongue is, mix those metaphors up a little bit. The tongue is as powerful as a rudder to a ship, as a bit to a horse. It is as powerful as a little spark to a flame. The tongue is hugely important, even in a believer's life. Because if we can control the tongue, James says, we are a mature individual. And it's not so much that we control our tongue that it's mature, but we've got a mature heart. Because again, that outflow, the abundance of that heart, the mouth speaks. The power of words, Proverbs 18:21, and again, just write that down. But Proverbs 18:21 simply says that life and death are in the power of the tongue. God created this universe in six 24-hour days. On the seventh day, He rested. But as you know there from Genesis chapter 1, verse 3, it says, after we have in the beginning God and the earth was formless and void and darkness, etc. Verse 3, then God said. Words are hugely powerful. Hugely powerful. God created this world with His words. With words. Jesus in the New Testament, He healed the sick. He raised the dead. He calmed the storm. All with words. Words are hugely powerful. Words. Words. Relationships, for the most part, are created with words. I remember almost 30 years ago, actually it was more than that, I was walking my roommate Doug Rand, and we were walking towards the campus was split, and we were walking to another part of the campus, and on this beautiful Spanish oak tree-lined thing there in Pensacola, Florida, sidewalk, we were walking towards the elementary side of the complex, and there was this young lady who was walking the other way. And Doug stopped because they were both in speech, and Doug introduced me to Robin. And relationships were started with nothing more than, hi, Robin, this is Dan. Dan, this is Robin. Oh, how are you? Where are you? What's your speech? You know, major, all that kind of stuff. And we went our way because we went to class and she went wherever. But just with those introductions, though, the relationships were created. With words, then, the relationship was enriched. Compliments were written and spoken. Prayer requests were shared. Struggles were shared. Joys were celebrated. Commitments were made. And for the most part, all of that was done through words. Words of, I love you. Words, will you marry me? Words, we're going to have a baby. And that was quite an exciting time when she said that. Words, we're going to have a son. Words, I got the job. Words, just the power of words to enrich relationships. And I know this is kind of hard, but we need to talk about it as well. With words, relationships are not enriched, but with words, relationships are destroyed. I don't love you anymore. Any feelings I have had for you are now long dead. I'm leaving you. I have found someone else. I want a divorce. Words are powerful. Words can be used to build up relationships. Words are used to destroy relationships. Within our church, words are just as powerful and can be used to build up or to destroy relationships. When you think about it, isn't our church simply nothing more than relationships? We are one body. As Paul writes three different times, we are one body. We are an organism. Yes, we have an organization, but we are one organism. And within that organism, each body is to be doing their God-given part. It's relationships. Relationships. It has been said that a pastor's role is only about 10% preaching. And then basically everything else is relationships. But it's not just the leaderships here that need to have good relationship skills, but also all of us here in the church need to have good relationship skills. Especially when within the church, relationships become enriched. Dawn said something that I wrote down as she said it. We are often able to, within our growth groups, open up. And relationships become more enriched. And that's by design. We have taken a bunch of acquaintances back in September, about the second week in September, I'm guessing about the 9th, doesn't matter. But we started out with just acquaintances. In a matter of a few months, we've built some friendships. And from that friendships, we're hopefully building trust. And then within that trust, there's going to be transparency. And within then the transparency, there will be accountability. But here's the potential. When lives and relationships are enriched, there's often an entering into another person's life. And when we're allowed into another person's life, there's often knowledge then about that person's life. And this knowledge is obtained primarily through, again, the usage of words. We sit there on Sunday nights in one of the three classrooms here. We meet in the classroom downstairs. And it would sound something like this. I really want you to be praying for me because I'm really struggling with. And through words, we are then inviting other people into our lives. See? God's saying amen. Hey, what that means is God's getting your attention. So bear with me for the next few minutes as we bring this to a conclusion. Don't let the stomach start taking over the mind yet. Now, what one does with that knowledge determines whether or not the relationships are going to be enriched or whether or not the relationships are going to be destroyed. And again, the primary way the relationships will be enriched or destroyed is going to be by words. The primary way relationships are destroyed is through the improper handling of one's knowledge of another person. And that improperly handling is, again, by words. Often we call it gossip. Gossip is simply telling someone else a story. And here again, if you don't get anything else, if it's not your story to tell, then don't tell the story. But we oftentimes could get into trouble by telling someone else's story. Let me give you this as an example. Pastor Jesse and Jessica, as you know, they've been blessed with another child. Okay? So, I don't know how long ago this was, but a few weeks ago or months ago, whenever this happened, as she's coming back from the doctors to find out she's pregnant, she very lovingly bestows upon you the honor of being the first person she tells besides her husband. Okay? Wow, what an honor. She's told me that she's pregnant. So, they call you while they're driving home from the doctors. So, with that information, then you jump on Facebook, you Twitter, you email, you text, you Skype, you hit the prayer chains, and the old-fashioned phone calls. And before the gardeners could even return home after running a few errands, you know the rest of that story. Everybody knows. In fact, they're now getting Skype messages and textbook and Facebook messages congratulating them. And they're walking in the door and they bump on their iPhone or they get on their computer and going, congratulations for what? We haven't told anybody. So you told a story, though, that wasn't yours to tell. So you robbed them of their story. And that is, at best, handicapped your relationship, because even if they have something good to share with you again, if they share it with you, it's going to be, do we want to really, you know, we better make sure we tell everybody else first. If we want to, because he or she's really got loose lips and they got that mass media down control. And I mean, CBS will have it on the news before we could even get home. that would be at best. At worst, you've destroyed it because, well, we just can't trust them. So we're just not going to tell them anymore. And that's also going to impact, again, the relationship. Now, we only quickly ran through Matthew 12. We barely even touched on Matthew 15. And I only gave you the reference of James 3. But in the doing of that, if they text or if they called me on their cell phone coming home from the doctors and said, "Hey, Pastor, we just got to share this with you. We're having another child." If I were to jump on all the media and the social media venues out there and tell everybody, I need to be examining why. Why would I do that? What's going into my heart? What is the compulsion that I must be the one to tell everybody they're having another kid? Let's turn it to the other extreme. Let's say you saw Trey. Where's Trey? There he is back there. Let's say you saw Trey and you're driving and you drove by, and as you're coming up this situation, you see a Middletown Township police car and all the lights are blinking. And as you drive by, you see this big old Chevy truck and you go, that looks like Trey's truck. And as you drive by, you glance out and you see this big bald-headed guy sitting there in the driver's seat. And you go, that is Trey. So, true to form, you jump on Skype, Twitter, Facebook, text, all the other social medias out there, and you do the old-fashioned phone calls. And before Trey could get home, Amy has already heard about it. I wonder how that would go over. I mean, you're not even to tell your wife that, by the way, hon, I got a ticket or whatever it was. Yeah, probably a ticket. So, you've now told a story that didn't belong to you. It's not your story to tell. And again, from Matthew 12, Matthew 15, and James 3, why? Why would you do that? Why would you tell a story that doesn't belong to you? Now, this is the preventative measure that I wanted to get to here. Within the growth groups, and we're going to be starting up some growth groups here, another one in just a minute. We're going to start up a growth group soon. In just a few weeks, we'll have some sign-up sheets. Hopefully, as people get up there and tell you that this is just not another thing we have to go to, or forget it, I ain't going to it. These are very good, profitable groups to be involved in. But within the growth groups, we deliberately put individuals together to establish and to enrich relationships. As those relationships go from acquaintances to friends to trust to transparency, we are often invited into their lives. And when we are invited into someone's lives, there is knowledge. And what we do with that knowledge then is very important. Let me give you just another example of what I mean, because this is so real. Let's say, for example, and I used this here a little while ago with somebody else, but let's say you've got kids, okay? And your kids' ministry on Sunday morning is to go and wash everybody's car. Just young little kids. And they want to love God and they want to serve God, and the only thing they can know is go out there and wash cars. So Sundays they're washing cars. But the trouble is, maybe they don't have the technique exactly down, so when they drop the sponge or the rag onto the asphalt or dirt, they just pick that up and keep rubbing and scrubbing. And we all go out there and we look at our clear coats and we go, whoa, that's an interesting finish. Wow, look at all those marks. Look at all those swirls. My goodness, where did that come from? So we get a hold of the parent and we call the dad up and we go, "Hey, Dad, really appreciate your kids' willingness to serve and desire to get out there and just minister. But, you know, they really need to be taught just some of the finer points of not rubbing grit into the clear coat, okay?" So, okay, that conversation goes pretty well. Dad then comes home, sits down with the kids, and what he does with that knowledge is very important. Okay, if he does it in a right way, like, forget the clear coat completely. Forget that anyone ever called and just said, "You know what, kids? Let me just see how you're washing the cars, and let me just give you a few more skills and techniques, and that's probably going to go away. Another way that it would happen is, I can't believe I got a phone call. Everybody in the church is mad at you because you scratched everybody's car. I don't have the kind of resources to get clear coats. What are you kids doing? And you've just hindered and crushed and destroyed any future. Oh, great. I want to volunteer to do that. It worked out so well last time. So those of us in the growth groups, with that knowledge, you better be careful with it. Now, again, I'm not saying we're all going to clam up. But here, let me give you an illustration of how this could work and why I'll come to my last few moments and we'll be done. If I'm in growth group, okay, and we're going from acquaintances to friendships to trust to transparency. We're in the transparency mode now. And I come and I feel that we're really being open and honest with each other. And I come to growth group and I sit down and say, hey, guys, I want you to pray with me. I'm really struggling with pornography. And before I get home, my wife knows and everybody else in the church knows I'm struggling with pornography. And then we come next Sunday to growth group. Okay, time to be open and honest and share with each other. And everyone is just, like, am I going to say anything again? And by the way, if it happened to me, how do you know it's not going to happen to Robin? So Robin says, I ain't going through what Dan went through. And you've just sabotaged an entire ministry of Oxford Valley Chapel. But it's not just that particular ministry. If it's not your story to tell, don't tell that story. So, there's many verses in Proverbs, and I would just encourage you, maybe, again, just write down Proverbs 16:28. Proverbs 16:28. Proverbs 18:18. Because even Proverbs 18:18 says, you know, the initial position of being a talebearer is a good one to be. Because the tales of a talebearer are delicious. We got info on somebody. And then Proverbs 19:17 as well is a verse. So what does all this mean in my conclusion? It basically means, as we have done in the past, which, by the way, let me just preface all this whole sermon. This is not reactionary preaching. To my knowledge, nobody is doing it yet. But I am concerned that this needs to be a preventative sermon, because as we are finding out, as Dawn mentioned, we are opening up. And our groups are now becoming, we've got friends now that we can trust. We've been with each other. And there is then that involving others and opening up and inviting others into our life. So it hasn't happened yet. So back to what I was going to say, as we've done in the past, private sins are dealt with privately. But when the area of gossip gets out and it becomes public sin, then we need to deal with it publicly. And as we trace the story back to you, then there will be a public acknowledgement of that, as well as just for the ministry of the church, because it has been sabotaged. So, words. Words are huge. They are absolutely powerful. God created this world with words. God healed sick, raised the dead. God stilled the storms with words. Our relationships were created and established with words. Those words have enriched and enlarged our relationships. Those words can destroy the relationships. Two things I want you to do here by way of application specifically. Number one, can you think through some instances in the recent past where you were rather surprised by the words that came out of your mouth? You need to sit down and do some heart searching. If you're having some struggle with that, you need to give me a call, one of the deacons, maybe even talk to one of your growth group leaders, and we can give you some tools that'll help you examine, oh my goodness, why did I say that? Because here again, if it comes from the heart, can we truly say I didn't mean it? It would probably be better said, I didn't mean to say that. In the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And then secondly, just think through, what do you do with the knowledge? Someone tells you a story. Someone invites you into your life. What do you do with that story? Just vow, if it's not your story to tell, don't tell it. Okay? two things. Examine your heart. Think back through when we slipped and allowed our heart to give words. You need to examine that and then think through, what do we do with that knowledge that has been given to us? Okay, heads bowed, eyes are closed. As the Holy Spirit